You do.
This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. A Ukrainian helicopter crashed into a childcare center in a Kyiv suburb on Wednesday, killing at least 14 people, including the country's Minister of the Interior, who was aboard the aircraft. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Interior Minister Denis Monastirsky was the most senior Ukrainian official to die since Russian forces invaded the country in February last year.
A minute of silence.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, speaking via video link to an audience of world leaders and corporate executives gathered in Davos, Switzerland, requested a moment of silence for the victims. Ukrainian First Lady Olana Zelenska, who was in Davos, said she knew Monastirsky personally, and the loss was a personal blow.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday said the situation on the front line remained tough, especially in the Donbas, calling it the, quote, epicenter of the most fierce and principled battles. Quote, we are seeing a gradual increase in the number of bombardments and attempts to conduct offensive actions by the invaders, Zelensky said in his evening address. Earlier in the day, he addressed the World Economic Forum in Davos, putting pressure on Western allies to outpace Russia with its supplies to Ukraine. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern will not seek re-election and plans to step down no later than early February, she said in a televised statement on Thursday.
This summer, I had hoped to find a way to prepare not just for another year, but another term, because that is what this year requires. I have not been able to do that.
A general election would be held on October 14th, she added. Ardern's term will conclude no later than February 7th. This is VOA News. The United Nations says mass graves containing the bodies of 49 civilians have been discovered in northeastern Congo after a series of weekend attacks blamed on local militia. UN Deputy Spokesman Farhan Haq told reporters in New York Wednesday the victims included six children. Peacekeepers from the UN mission had gone out to investigate after reports of the militia attacks. Local authorities say the militia fighters also abducted women from the communities they abducted. Microsoft on Wednesday said it would eliminate thousands of jobs as the company braces for a potential recession. Reuters correspondent Chris Dingham reports.
Microsoft on Wednesday said it will lay off 10,000 employees, adding to the surge in job cuts across the tech sector as the company faces a slowdown in spending on cloud computing. The timing of the announcement comes the same day its cloud computing rival Amazon said more employees will be notified in its own move to cut 18,000 jobs. In a note to employees, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella said the layoffs affecting less than 5% of Microsoft's workforce would conclude by the end of March.
Reuters correspondent Chris Dignam. Contrasting viewpoints on Elon Musk are being presented in the Tesla tweet trial. The AP's Lisa Dwyer has more.
Elon Musk was alternately depicted as a liar who callously jeopardized the savings of regular people or a well-intentioned visionary at a trial focused on a Tesla buyout that never happened. The case is focused on two August 2018 tweets that the billionaire posted on Twitter. The tweets indicated that Musk had lined up the financing to take Tesla private at a time when the automaker's stock was slumping amid production problems. The prospect of a $72 billion buyout fueled a rally in the company's stock price that abruptly ended a week later after it became apparent that Musk did not have the funding to pull off the deal after all. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg returns to Davos on Thursday to press her battle against fossil fuels at the annual meeting of the global business and political elite. 2 days after police briefly detained her at a protest at a coal mine in Germany, Thunberg and other young campaigners will take part in a debate with the head of the International Energy Agency on the sidelines of the World Economic Forum. The 20-year-old Swede made a splash when she attended the forum as a teenager in January 2020, warning that, quote, our house is still on fire, and complaining that her demands had, quote, been completely ignored. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
is Thursday, January 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinny Rofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, NATO chief calls for significant increase in weapons for Ukraine.
And this may be a pivotal moment in the war. Most likely this war will end at the negotiating table. The outcome of those negotiations will be totally dependent on the strength on the battlefield.
The head of the UN sounds the alarm on looming climate disasters at the World Economic Forum.
UN Chief Antonio Guterres did not sugarcoat the scale of the problems, describing what he called the sorry state of the world. He presented a bleak picture of a global economy in crisis.
And a UN agency describes growing global killing of journalists. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said on Wednesday that Ukraine needs a, quote, significant increase, unquote, in weapons at a pivotal moment in Russia's invasion, and such support is the only way to a negotiated peaceful solution. This as defense leaders from around 50 countries and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization will hold talks at Germany's Ramstein Air Base on Friday, the latest in a series of meetings since Russian forces swept into Ukraine nearly 11 months ago.
And this may be a pivotal moment in the war, and we need to understand that most likely this war will end at the negotiating table. The outcome of those negotiations will be totally dependent on the strength on the battlefield. So if we want Ukraine to prevail as an independent sovereign nation and a peaceful negotiated solution, more support for Ukraine is the way to a negotiated peace. They have need for a wide range of different types of weapons and supplies. We see the urgent need for more air defense systems. Therefore, I welcome the announcement from Canada, from the United States, from Germany and others to provide more advanced systems. Then, of course, we need also more armor, as we now see those allies are providing. But we need to remember that this is not only about providing new systems. It's also about ensuring that all the weapons we have already delivered are working, are functioning as they should, meaning that we need to supply enormous amounts of ammunition, of spare parts, of maintenance, to ensure that all the systems which are all there work as they should. President Putin has shown no sign of preparing for peace. Therefore, he must realize that he cannot win on the battlefield. When he realizes that, then he'll be willing to sit down and negotiate a solution that can ensure lasting peace and ensure that Ukraine prevails. I welcome that allies are stepping up. Germany has delivered significantly support to Ukraine with artillery, with ammunition, and also the advanced Patriot systems. And then some allies have also announced that they're ready to deliver heavy battle tanks.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. As the leaders of the United States and the Netherlands show a united front against the war in Ukraine, Moscow has announced it will boost its military capabilities. But as VOA's Veronica Balderas-Inglesias reports, Russia also leaves the door open for high-level talks with the CIA.
As Ukraine mourns the victims of Saturday's Russian missile strike in the city of Dnipro, U.S. President Joe Biden and Dutch Prime Minister Mark Rutte decried Moscow's aggressions during a bilateral meeting in Washington.
Russia is just continuing to act in ways that are almost unbelievable, the brutality with which they're acting.
Rutte announced more support for Kyiv.
We have decided to spend another $2.5 billion on helping the Ukraine war effort. We have the intention to join what you are doing with Germany on the Patriot project, so the air defense system. I think that is important.
Also on Tuesday, circulating on Russian social networks, what looked like images of a makeshift memorial in Moscow for the Dnipro victims. At the government level, however, more promises of military might by Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu.
Strengthen the combat component of the Navy, the aerospace forces, and the strategic missile forces.
Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov left the door open, however, for high-level talks between Russian officials and the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, William J. Burns.
It could be excluded, of course. This dialogue is useful. I don't know the exact dates.
Near Romania, meanwhile, NATO expanded the surveillance of Russia's military activities with the deployment of three new planes. And on the ground in Ukraine, the International Atomic Energy Agency set a permanent presence to help safeguard key nuclear facilities. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Veronica. A report by the UN cultural body UNESCO released this week finds that killing of journalists and media workers jumped 50% in 2022 to a total of 86 worldwide. That's about one death every 4 days. UNESCO Director General Audrey Azoulay called the new numbers alarming and urged authorities to ramp up efforts to stop such crimes and bring the perpetrators to justice because, in his words, quote, indifference is a major factor in this climate of violence, unquote. The largest number of fatal attacks in 2021 occurred in Asia, with 42% of the killings, followed by Latin America and Caribbean with 25%. The third deadliest region was Africa, with 18% of the killing. Guillaume Ganella is the head of UNESCO's Freedom of Expression and Safety of Journalists section. He tells VOA's Carol Van Dam the increases follow 3 years of fewer killings of journalists.
Prior to 2022, we were observing a trend of reducing the numbers of killings, although we were also monitoring a raise in other kinds of problems. But last year, we witnessed it again, unfortunately, the increase was of 50%.
What do you attribute that to? I mean, we know about the Russian invasion in Ukraine, but most of these numbers, from what I read, are coming in Latin America.
Yes, unfortunately, still most of the journalists killed are journalists that are not involved in the coverage of conflicts or wars. They are journalists involved in the coverage of the daily life, corruption, organized crime, and human rights violations, environmental violations, and so on and so forth. We had, of course, at least 11 killings condemned by the Director General in the war in Ukraine, but this is not enough to explain the 50% increase. But there are some hypotheses. One of them, of course, is the two previous years during the pandemic. Several journalists worldwide were also in lockdown, so not necessarily exposing themselves in this dangerous environment in the coverage of organized crime. They were doing that from home. There is also a hypothesis in terms of an increasing hostility against freedom of expression in general, but press freedom in particular, a kind of a narrative from different important leaders, not only political leaders, but sometimes religious leaders, a narrative that's a narrative against journalism.
There seems to be, like, what you're pointing to is a coarsening of societal attitudes toward journalists and how the violence is just becoming more common.
Yes, when we say the policies to tackle these issues, we say that they should be comprehensive policies, and we call them the policies of the three P's: prevention, protection, and prosecution of the crimes. And why I mentioned that, because this tells a little bit the story here. If there is not a understanding that press freedom is an individual but also a collective right, then we have a problem for this overall prevention perspective of the journalism as an important profession for protecting democracy.
That's Guillaume Canella, the head of the Freedom of Expression and Safety of Journalists section of UNESCO. He was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Dam from UNESCO headquarters in Paris. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warns that the world is flirting with climate disaster. He challenged the gathering of political and business leaders at the World Economic Forum in the Swiss Alpine village of Davos to act now to create conditions for long-term solutions to this and other global threats. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN Chief Antonio Guterres did not sugarcoat the scale of the problems, describing what he called the sorry state of the world. He presented a bleak picture of a global economy in crisis that was facing recession in many parts of the world. While the world was emerging from COVID-19, he warned it was not prepared to tackle future pandemics. The Secretary General spoke of the misery inflicted upon millions by conflict, violence, and war.
Especially the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Not only because of the untold suffering of the Ukrainian people, but because of its profound global implications on global food and energy prices, on trade and supply chains, on questions of nuclear safety, and on the very foundations of international law and the United Nations Charter.
Guterres said the world was flirting with climate disaster. He said greenhouse gas emissions are at record levels and growing. He blamed it on nations failing to abide by their commitments to limit global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees.
Without further action, we are headed to a 2.8-degree increase. And the consequences, as we all know, would be devastating. Several parts of our planet would be uninhabitable, and for many, it will mean a death sentence.
The UN chief expressed concern about the deepening North-South divide, adding the wealthier world and their leaders seemingly did not truly grasp the degree of frustration and anger in the southern part of the globe.
Frustration and anger about the gross inequity of vaccine distribution in the recent past. Frustration and anger about a climate crisis that is crippling countries that contributed least to global heating, and the lack of the financial resources to respond to the challenge.
The United Nations chief said the world must unite to find solutions to globally interlinked problems. Unfortunately, he said, that was unlikely to happen, as the world faced the gravest levels of geopolitical division and mistrust in generations, and that, he said, was undermining everything. Guterres appealed to his powerful, influential audience to help find a way to come together to bridge these divisions and restore trust. He added, the cost of inaction was far greater than the cost of action. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
In other news, the European Parliament called on Wednesday for the EU to list Iran's Revolutionary Guards as a terrorist organization, blaming the powerful force for the repression of protesters and the supply of drones to Russia. Ties between the EU member states and Tehran have deteriorated in recent months as efforts to revive nuclear talks have stalled. Tehran has detained several European nationals, and the bloc has become increasingly critical of a continuing violent crackdown on protesters, including executions. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Pope Francis is set to travel to the DRC and the South Sudan at the end of the month, a visit the pontiff had earlier been forced to postpone due to health issues. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome.
Pope Francis visits the Democratic Republic of Congo from January 31st to February 3rd and then will spend 2 days in South Sudan before returning to the Vatican. When the Holy See announced the trip, which was called off due to the Pope's knee ailments last summer, it said the Archbishop of Canterbury and the moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland would be travelling with the Pope to the two African countries. The Pope will first travel to Kinshasa, where he will meet with the country's authorities, victims of the conflict in the eastern part of the country, and representatives of charitable organizations. Then he will fly to Juba, the capital of South Sudan, on February 3rd. Kinshasa, a large and impoverished city of more than 10 million people, is getting a facelift ahead of the papal visit. The Apostolic Nuncio in the DRC, Ettore Balestrero, said a huge effort is being made to ensure security and public order while the Pope is in the country. It is the first time a Pope travels to the country in 37 years, and Balestrero said that for many people, Pope Francis's arrival is, in his words, a dream come true. In an interview with Vatican News, the Archbishop said that the main purpose of the visit to the DRC is to awaken faith in those who do not have it and to strengthen the joy of those who do. He added that throughout the country, there is an anticipation of receiving a word of consolation and also of healing of the wounds that are still bleeding, especially in the East. On Tuesday, Pope Francis sent his condolences to victims of a bombing of a Pentecostal church in Kazindi in North Kivu province in eastern Congo. Islamic militants claimed responsibility for the attack that killed at least 14 people and injured more than 60. The Pope was originally planning to visit Goma in the north, but as violence continues to ravage parts of the province, the stop was scrapped. Pope Francis has long desired to travel to predominantly Christian South Sudan, but the unstable situation in the country had complicated plans for a visit. A peace deal was signed in the country in 2018, putting an end to a five-year civil war which killed 400,000 people. But the nation is still reeling from hunger and violence. Speaking at the end of the Sunday Angelus prayers in St. Peter's Square in December, the Pope made one more appeal for an end to the violence in South Sudan and asked for prayers for reconciliation. Pope Francis expressed concern at the news of violent clashes in South Sudan and prayed for peace and national reconciliation and an end to the attacks. He also called for civilians to be respected. In South Sudan, Pope Francis will meet with internally displaced persons and take part in an ecumenical prayer service at the John Garang Mausoleum in Juba, where he will also celebrate Mass on Sunday before returning to the Vatican. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
In Senegal, two major traffic crashes in just 8 days killed 62 people, reviving a question of road safety standards in Senegal and across Africa. The continent is home to the highest rate of road fatalities in the world. Experts blame a dangerous mix of poor infrastructure and driver education, as well as low-quality imports, as Annika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar, Senegal.
Rusted buses fill Dakar's roads at rush hour. Passengers hang off the back doors, while teenagers on rollerblades cling to the sides, dodging horse carts and unpainted speed bumps. There are no traffic lights or stop signs. Cars have the right of way, and pedestrians cross at high risk. Road conditions outside Senegal's major cities can feel even more dangerous, where packed buses barrel down two-lane potholed roads, the roofs piled with mountains of cargo and sheep. There are no medians or street lights, and farm animals roam freely into unchecked traffic. On Monday, it was a donkey that caused a public bus to swerve and collide with a truck in the country's northern region of Louga. 22 people were killed and 28 injured. Just 8 days prior, 40 people were killed and about 80 injured in a crash in Senegal's southeastern Kaffrine region. A tire had burst, sending a passenger bus into the path of another oncoming bus. The government responded by banning night bus trips between districts and outlawed used tire imports. At 26.6 deaths per 100,000 people, Africa has the worst rate of traffic fatalities in the world, nearly triple that of Europe, according to a 2018 report by the World Health Organization. Christopher Cost is the Africa Program Director at the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy, an urban planning nonprofit. He says that in order to improve road safety, African countries need to shift public transportation business models.
Because in so many African countries, we're still operating with the target system where driver incomes are directly related to the number of people they carry. And as a result, they rush as fast as possible to the destination. And that leads to a lot of the road safety challenges that we have.
Switching to a salary system would incentivize drivers to drive safely instead of cramming their buses full and speeding to their destinations, Cost said. Carolyn Mimano is a partnerships manager, also with the Institute for Transportation and Development Policy. Public transport could be further improved by limiting the age of buses, increasing bus inspections, and capping driver hours, she said. Within cities, governments have many options to improve safety. African city streets are shared by cars, pedestrians, cyclists, street vendors, and even horse carts. Yet planning efforts focus only on vehicles, Mimano said. Pedestrians in Africa represent 40% of all road traffic deaths, compared to 23% globally, according to the WHO.
We still have a car-centric approach to transport planning. Even with road crashes, we think that the solution is to expand the road, and that doesn't really solve the problem. What actually happens is people speed more.
Improvement is possible. Mimano points to Rwanda's capital, Kigali, which has speed cameras and salaried bus drivers, and Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, which has elevated pedestrian crosswalks, wide sidewalks, and 21 kilometers of dedicated bus lanes. Nika Henry is the head of the United Nations Road Safety Fund.
Africa and its development partners must prioritize road safety in their national budgets at a level that is commensurate to the burden and develop and implement national road safety programs in a way that engages all of the government, including health, transport, education, finance, and trade sectors.
Senegal sees an average of 745 road fatalities per year, with most deadly accidents occurring at night, according to Senegal's Information Bureau. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. A former Mexican Vice Minister of Trade joins the Vice President of the Council of the Americas and America Society to analyze the outcome of the annual Three Amigos Summit, where the leaders of Canada, Mexico, and the United States met to discuss thorny issues of trade, immigration, and other key issues affecting their region. The promise and perils facing the Western Hemisphere, next, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the discovery of classified documents at President Biden's old office and his Delaware home have thrust Attorney General Merrick Garland back into a situation none of his predecessors have encountered. We'll have this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu Afo in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
4.1 million people in the region need assistance, according to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. Of these, 3.3 million are scrambling to secure sufficient food. Bab al-Hawa is the only border crossing between Turkey and northern Syria still open for UN aid deliveries to Syria's northwestern region. For years, the United Nations Security Council annually voted to reauthorize the delivery of aid through several crossing points. In 2021, however, Russia cut back deliveries to a single crossing point. In 2022, Russia further limited the mandate, insisting it be renewed every 6 months. On January 9th, one day before the mandate expired, the United Nations Security Council voted to keep the Bab al-Hawa open. The United States welcomes the unanimous adoption of this resolution on the cross-border humanitarian assistance delivery mechanism, said Linda Thomas-Greenfield, U.S. Permanent Representative to the United Nations.
In extending the cross-border mechanism, we have ensured that food, water, shelter, and other critical humanitarian assistance will continue to reach the Syrian people. We have ensured that shipments of medical equipment and treatments will not be cut off from a country facing a horrific cholera outbreak. And we have ensured that humanitarian workers will continue to do their heroic work.
But while this lifeline will continue to operate, so much more could have been done, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Renewing this resolution should never have been a subject of debate. The debate we need to have is how to strengthen the mechanism to reach more people with more assistance.
We must show the Syrian people that we will continue to put their humanity first, that we will do everything in our power to increase predictable access to those in need. Because right now, needs across all of Syria, from the northwest to the northeast and all 14 governorates of Syria are greater than they've ever been.
Even as humanitarian needs around the world have spiked, the United States' commitment to the Syrian people is unwavering, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. We have long called on the international community to provide generous support to the Syrian humanitarian appeal for the Syrian people. We once again urge the Assad regime to do what is necessary, after so many years and after so much violence, to end this brutal war and work towards a just and sustainable peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.